used to be a joke with Jobim and me, because he and I and Sergio Mendes were all Aquarians. And so when I see Jobim, he'd say, what do you hear from the other Aquarian, and vice versa. And then one day, listen, this is really kind of funny. One day he said to me, we were talking about, he started naming all the great Aquarians in history. I says, Antonio, you must remember something. Stan Getz is an Aquarian. And he says, I think I'll change my sign.
He sure loves Stan Getz. Jim, let's start saying, how together you are with Jobim to...
How I met him?
Yeah.
When I had been editor at Downbeat, and I resigned in the fall of 1961. And my predecessor as editor was a fellow named, and is a friend of mine to this day, Don Gold. And Don Gold was working for Show Business Illustrated, and he asked me to write some reviews for them. And it came an album by Jean Gilbert, whom I'd never heard of. And it was a stack of records, which ones do you want to review? And I paid no attention to it. Because my whole concept of samba was what Hollywood did with it with Carmen Miranda, and they treated her abominably, as you know. They made her a figure of comedy.
Right.
Instead of the singer she really was. So I didn't pay too much attention to it. And then one day I says, well, I'll put it on and see what it's like. And I hadn't heard two tunes, and I was in love with the music. And it was an album they called in this country, I think they called it Brazil's Brilliant Jean Gilberto. I had a chance to go with the Paul Winter Sextet to South America, and I always had, first of all, I love languages, and I already spoke French, and I wanted to learn Spanish, and I wanted to look into the Mexican culture and all of it, but I particularly was interested in, I'd become interested in Brazil, and I agreed to go along on the tour as manager of the thing for the U.S. State Department, and we spent 6 months down there, and I wanted to meet Jobim, and I wanted to meet Jean Gilberto. And I called, I knew who the publisher of a lot of those songs was, a guy named Enrique Lebendiger, who was a Swiss. And I called him, and he gave me Jean Gilberto's phone number. And I called, and his wife Astrid answered the phone. She spoke some English. So she told me that her husband would that evening be over at Jobim's house, and she gave me Jobim's number. And I called him, and I told, and at that time he spoke almost no English, very little. He learned a lot later on, obviously. But his family background was French, and I speak pretty fluent French. So all my first conversations with Jobim when I first knew him were in French. So I went over to the house, and Jean Gilberto was sitting there with the group called the Carioca Boys. They were rehearsing, so danso samba, vai, 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 vai. That's in the living room. And Jobim and I are out in the kitchen drinking, as he pronounced it, squatch. That's when I first knew him. And I did the adaptation of Corcovado and the Desafinado. I did them in Rio while I was still there. And then a lot of the other stuff was written when he came up to New York. And one of the memories I have is we were working on A Vivo Soñando in English, which we called Dreamer in English. And he said something to me that I think was incredibly deep. He looked at me with playing guitar, and I'm writing. I got my hands on the note paper. And he says, "We're fooling everybody. They think this is popular music."
I like tell you. And it's interesting to how hard it is to translate music words into another language, especially
it's not only hard, it's impossible.
Yes,
especially it cannot be done.
The humor, how you deal with the humor?
When I lost one joke, for example, in Desafinado, when I lost that, all that has developed is Inglachi down. I couldn't make it rhyme in English, so and there is the reference to the Rolleiflex in there, and so I said, I took your picture with my trusty. Trusty's funny, like you've been using it for years, like your trusty handgun or something. I took your picture with my trusty Rolleiflex, and now all that has developed is a complex. I had to get another joke because I was going to lose that one. I was either going to lose the rhyme or I was going to lose the joke. Humor is the most impossible thing in the world to translate. It is not difficult, it's impossible. I know Spanish fairly well. about as well as I know Portuguese. I'm familiar with both. But Lalo Schifrin, who is, of course, is an Argentine, Lalo tells me if Spanish is your native language, Don Quixote is the funniest book ever written, page after page of laugh out loud. But you translate it into English, and all of that disappears. And so where I lost one joke, I'd have to make a new one. And I could never translate the stuff. So what I would try to do was penetrate to the essence of the nature of the song and reconstruct that mood in English. So that's how it was done.
So you remember, you did The Dreamer, you did Quiet Nights, Corcovado, Samba do Avião, Light Up.
I did the Samba do Avião.
Samba do Avião.
I did Estrada Branca.
Estrada Branca.
Became Someone to Light Up My Life. I think that's what it became. I can't remember now. I get a little confused even myself about that. I did several. There's several of them that are not terribly well known that I think are very, very pretty. Some of his early songs, like Fue Anoche.
Oh, yeah. Fue Anoche is beautiful, yeah.
Which I did in English. Bonita, which it's got Ray Gilbert's name on it, but it's really mine.
I can't believe what's happened with this, yeah.
He's dead, and he deserves to be.
Everybody hates Ray Gilbert.
Everybody hated Ray Gilbert. I mean, this Happy Madness is mine. That's Estrada Branca.
This Happy Madness.
And Ray Gilbert stole from everybody. He stole credit on that tune. He put his name on it. He changed maybe three or four words and made it worse. And then he put his name on it. He did this to, I'll tell you who else he screwed. Can we say that on the air?
Yes, yes.
I'll tell you who he really screwed royally. It was Marcus Valle.
Marcus Valle, yeah. He's still...
And I'll tell you the truth. He's got his name on Dindee, or Gingy, as you say in Rio.
How he got his name on Gingy, I don't know.
Because he put his name on it, and it really was written by Aloysius de Oliveira.
Uh-huh.
And he wrote it in Portuguese and in English.
Right.
And what you can really detect if you examine their lyric carefully is Lewis is not quite comfortable with English.
Uh-huh.
And there's a couple of little mistakes in it grammatically, which I would never change because they help. They add to the charm of the thing.
Right.
And I do sing that song, even though I didn't write it. And I love that song so much, and I love Lewis's lyric. But, I mean, Ray Gilbert put his name on it. He did that to a hell of a lot of people.
Yeah. And,
Lewis and I we came very close to suing him. His wife, Janice Page, the actress, is a very nice woman, and after mm-hmm. he died, she called all of us, and she did her very best to see that we all got paid properly and credited.
Yeah, yeah.
But you'll still see Ray Gilbert at any recording of Bonita when it's mostly mine, and you will often not see Lewis Oliveira's name on Dindee.
What about, I have it here in my hands, a CD they record, Yesterday I Heard the Rain, and you have like three Jobim tunes here.
Yeah.
And you in the process to record another Jobim?
I'm doing another.
It's an interview that I did with Jenny Lee, the man who, unbelievable. Besides, he's the favorite of Jobim as a lyricist, what he did with all the words in English of Jobim's tunes, like De Soltero said. I think he did an incredible, beautiful job. Get back here. Try to set up another set of music, and we call back Arnaldo De Soltero in Rio de Janeiro and see what we play. The whole album, the Get Gilberto album. Then we play the Stan Getz big band Bossa Nova, arranged and conducted by Gary McFarlane. We play Manhã de Carnaval by Luiz Bonfá. And Antonio Maria, but he is only the instrumental. They only put the name of Antonio Maria. I mean, Luiz Bonfá, I'm sorry. Balanço no Samba, Melancólico, e Entre Amigos e Chega de Saudade. The last track by Antônio Carlos Jobim, Vinícius de Moraes. The other tracks by Gary McFarland. And their band is incredible. Stan Getz, Doc Savellison, Billy Grohl, Joe Ferrante, Clark Terry. And man,
so many people here. In the Ray Beckstein, Eddie Kane, you know, and they even have here also Carmen Costa playing the cabasa, Jose Paulo also on percussion, and Carmen Costa. This was all recorded in New York City, August 27 and 28, 1962. We're gonna check it out and call back Arnaldo de Soltero. But first, we're going to call him back. Let's see if we can, let's call him back. 212-854-9920 is our phone number here. If you have any question to us, or, you know, if you want to say something about the Gail Gilberto, that you have any information, please give it to us. 212-854-9920. Arnaldo de Soltero. Arnaldo is with us now, back. And let's talk about the Grammy night when they went to receive all the prizes. In 1965 was the Grammy. The record was recorded in 1963, was released in 1964. And the Grammy prizes was in 1965, right? Arnaldo de Soltero.
Exactly. Are you listening?
Yes.
Hello?
Yes, we are on.
Oh, okay. Yes. I think that it's another part, né, of this magical stuff, né? Things that we were talking about when the music was playing. And I would like to mention also the fantastic idea that Creed Taylor had to use paintings by the abstract painter from Puerto Rico called Olga Albizu. He used her paintings in all the albums from the Bossa Nova era by Stan Getz. Jazz Samba Encore, Big Band Bossa Nova, Get Gilberto, and Get Gilberto number 2. So it's, you see that Creed Taylor had the plan, even in visual aspects, you know. And we know that we are fans of CTI, né? How important covers were to Creed Taylor, né? How much he cared about the visual presentation of the album. So, speaking about the Grammys, it was an unprecedented success for a jazz album. It was the first time that an album labeled as a jazz album that won so many Grammys, and that won that album of the year, you know. So, let's remind, it was Engineer, the album of the year, record of the year, best jazz performance, and best engineering. And just to give people an idea of how important this everything was, album of the year, the nominees were Get Gilberto, People with Barbra Streisand, the original soundtrack of Pink Panther by Henry Mancini, and the soundtrack to Funny Girl. And another album by All Hurt that wasn't so important and was forgotten, called Cotton Candy. So, Get Gilberto won Album of the Year. And Get Gilberto also yielded, of course, the single Girl from Ipanema that won Best Record of the Year. The other nominees were Hello Dolly, with Louis Armstrong, I Want to Hold Your Hand with The Beatles, People with Barbra Streisand, and Downtown with Petula Clark. Petula Clark was like the Taylor Swift of the 60s, for people that don't remind her, you know. And then the album, of course, for Best Engineering, the award was given to Phil Ramone, his name is Philip Rabinowitz, and best jazz performance by for an album by Stan Getz. And the Grammy, the Get Gilberto was also nominated in the category of Best New Artist of the Year. That was fantastic because we had in the same category two people from Get Gilberto. Antônio Carlos Jobim and Astrud Gilberto were nominated for Best New Artist. And Beatles won and were also there. The nominees were Petula Clark, Beatles, and Morgana King. And the category that Stan Getz won for best small jazz performance, it was with Miles Davis in Europe, André Previn, My Fair Lady, an album by Laurindo Almeida and Manhattan and the Modern Jazz Quartet. It's a fantastic album called Collaboration. And Oscar Peterson with Clark Terry, Mumbles. And in the other category that was best jazz large performance by a large group, the nominees were Miles Davis and Gil Evans, Quiet Nights. An album by Gil Evans called The Individualism of Gil Evans. A fantastic album of Quincy Jones playing Mancini called Quincy Jones Explores the Music of Henry Mancini. An album that Oscar Peterson did with Nelson Riddle. And the Shelly Manne version of My Fair Lady, besides a Woody Herman album called Woody Herman 64. And the winner was Laurindo Almeida with an album called The Guitar from Ipanema. Not The Girl, but The Guitar from Ipanema. And João Gilberto was nominated as Best Jazz Singer. Actually, as Best Singer, Best Pop Singer. And the other nominees were Louis Armstrong with Hello Dolly, Tony Bennett with Who Can I Turn To, Andy Williams with Call Me Irresponsible, and Dean Martin with Everybody Loves the Somebody. It means a lot, man, because all these songs were big, big hits at that time, especially Hello Dolly, that was the biggest pop hit in the career of Louis Armstrong ever, you know. And Astrud Gilberto, that won the Grammy for Single of the Year, Record of the Year, also was nominated as Best Female Singer. But she lost to Barbara Streisand, who won for People. And the other nominees were Nancy Wilson, Petula Clark, and Gail Garnett, you know. Anyway, I think that the achievement that Astrud Gilberto reached with this album, it's incredible because she became famous worldwide. She became the image of Bossa Nova. She became the image of the Brazilian woman. She became the image of the Carioca, the Rio de Janeiro girl. And she became the voice of Bossa Nova in the world with just two songs in an album. It's fantastic. It was not her album, you know. It's impossible to find in the music history a similar kind of victory, of achievement. It's fantastic, you know. I'm a big fan of Astrud Gilberto. She's completely underrated in Brazil, of course, because she's the most popular singer of Brazilian music in the world, and the most popular Brazilian singer in the world of any genre, of course, no question about it. Because in the 60s, her contract, her deal with Verve Records, yielded so many impressive albums, you know. And Creed Taylor worked so well with Astrud Gilberto. I know that they had. Later on, they have some discussions and disagreements and everything. But the time that the team worked well, the results were fantastic because all the Astrud Gilberto albums are brilliantly produced and arranged. I don't know any other singer that had recorded with Klaus Ogerman, Gil Evans, Don Sebesky, Elmir Deodato, Al Cohn, Walter Vanderlei. She recorded with the best arrangers of the world, Elmir Deodato. João Donato also did arrangements for Astrud Gilberto, one of the albums on Verve, and backed her on two other albums. So it's incredible. You know, the level of the quality that she reached is impressive. And her last albums for Verve were more pop-oriented. Creed Taylor had already left Verve, you know, and had moved to A&M and starting CTI. But she remained with Verve and did two beautiful, beautiful albums and in 69 and 70. It's fantastic. I'm a big fan of Astrud, and I hope that one day Brazilians will pay attention to and give her the what she deserves in terms of recognition and admiration and everything, because she became extremely famous and popular with two songs, and then she kept the fame, she kept the quality, and she kept releasing great albums, including the fact that her first solo album also received a Grammy nomination. You know, so she was the only Brazilian singer that received Grammy nominations in two consecutive years.
What about this? I have the box set, the German Verve release. It is a 5 LPs, and I don't have the bonus track that you got that you sent me now. What is the difference?
Oh, this is fantastic, because after the album was released, it was before the album received the Grammys in 65. But in 64, when the album was already a hit, Creed Taylor booked a concert at Carnegie Hall to celebrate not only the release of Get Gilberto, but also the tremendous success of Get Gilberto. And João Gilberto performed the second part of the concert. Stan Getz did the first part with his band, with Gary Burton on vibraphone. And João Gilberto performed leading a fantastic trio with Kira Betts, who was Ella Fitzgerald's bassist at the time. João Gilberto loved Kira Betts. And when we were trying to do an album with Dave Grusin by the late 2000, and he wanted Dave Grusin, he wanted Bob Brookmeyer on the album, and he wanted Kidder Betts on the bass. And Elcio Milito on drums. Elcio Milito plays extremely well on this concert. He's one of my all-time favorite drummers. I know he was your friend too. He was a dear friend of mine. We met many times in Rio and also in Carmel, where he lived in California. And in the last part of the concert, Astrud came to the stage and reunited for the first and last time with João Gilberto and Stan Getz for this concert that was taped in Carnegie Hall, October 64. Three tracks were released: a live version of Garota de Ipanema, Girl from Ipanema, a live version of Corcovado, Quiet Nights, and also a tune by Carlos Lira, Você e Eu, You and I. I think that all three are sensational. There are some technical issues as you listen. There are some technical problems, but they are fantastic playing together. And the audience goes crazy, goes nuts, you know, it's fantastic. People go to heaven listening to them.
Well, I'm going to play here from YouTube because I didn't find the CD. I have the track that you sent me, Você e Eu, right? Me and...
I sent to all of you, all the three to you. If you choose which one. I think that okay. If you could play the three, it would be wonderful.
I'm going to try to start just with this one. For don't be any difficulties here. Right. So, and then after that, I want to start talking about a different album, because Luis Bonfá also is very important in this connection with Stan Getz. We're going to get into Jazz Samba Encore after that. What do you think? All right, man. And let's get into another album that it is really incredible. We get into the Jazz Samba Encore. Let's talk about Luis Bonfá right now.
It was Stanguette's first album with a Brazilian musician and with a Brazilian singer.
The great Maria Helena Toledo, the mother of Mario Toledo, our friend.
Yeah, before we start with Stan Getz, I remember now.
Our late friend.
Yeah, listen to a scene, Astrud Gilberto live many times on the SOBs, that she used to be 3 or 4 nights straight with 2 shows nightly, I remember. Lines and lines of people, all shows sold out. Unbelievable, the band. You know, Paul Rich, that was here with Mafalda Minotti, he plays with Astrud, also guitar player. Romero Lumbamba, remember, and Duduca da Fonseca played many years with Astrud. Yes?
Yes. And what song do you prefer on Jazz Samba Encore?
Oh, let's get into it, and then, but I'm going to play... Let's play some songs straight to put the people in the mood on this Sunday afternoon. It's Sambalero is the start, the first track. Then there comes So Danço Samba, Insensatez, e O Morro Não Tem Vez. Let's play until track number 4, those 4 songs.
Okay. So just one comment on Insensatez, how insensitive. Antônio Carlos Jobim plays piano.
Great, and he did the arrangement.
Other two songs, Jobim plays acoustic rhythm guitar for Bonfá. Bonfá plays the lead guitar, and Jobim is on the rhythm guitar.
Oh, that's great, man! I don't even remember this stuff. Really good. And you have one more time here on the notes here. Tommy Williams appear again.
Yeah, but this time it was actually him. that's the, maybe where the big mess began, you know, because
this is real. This is the real
because
Tommy
Healy played with Getz for a while, and Don Payne also on bass. And Don Payne was the first bass player that came to Brazil with Charlie Bird, and later on with Tony Bennett.
Right.
When he came with Tony Bennett, he stayed in Brazil for many months and became friend with Bonfá, Luiz Essa, and everybody.
Man, really, who is Paulo Ferreira? I don't remember. Bass player?
Paulo Ferreira is a false name for Edson Machado on drums.
Oh, I see. And what about José Carlos on drums?
Fake name.
This is all fake here. Unbelievable, huh? This is a track 8 to 10, Stan Getz, Luis Bonfá, Don Payne, you're right, and David Bailey.
Yeah. Great drummer, Dave Bailey, great drummer. I think the Jorge do Vivier is on this album too, playing bass in some tracks.
You're right, yeah. His name is here too. But anyway, let's play the album and we'll be right back. Beautiful Jazz Samba Encore, Stan Getz and Luis Bonfá. Samba de Duas Notas, before Del Morro Não Tem Vez. Insensatez with the voice, a beautiful voice of Maria Helena Toledo. Só Danço Samba e Sambalero. This is all tracks from Samba Jazz Encore, Stan Getz and Luis Bonfá, Verve Records. Hey, man, what a beautiful album. Also, of the Getz, Gilberto, History of Bossa Nova here, and we are with Arnaldo de Soltero. And let's give another credit about this whole connection. We're talking about the Carnegie Hall concert. Without the Carnegie Hall concert, probably we don't have all this. happened. And Arnaldo, let's talk about David Zing, the photographer that was in Brazil, an American photographer who also discovered this whole thing and said, let's go to Carnegie Hall.
Oh, David Zing, he was fantastic. Great photographer, American photographer. And he was already very famous in the USA. He used it to do fashion and many other styles for many important magazines and Esquire. And then he came to Brazil to work and to do an essay and decided to stay. And he lived and became a Bossa Nova fan, became a friend of João Gilberto and Jobim. And he was a very important person behind the scenes of the Carnegie Hall concert, because the concert officially was conceived by Sidney Fry of Audio Fidelity Records. But there were some people that were essential in making it happen. And one of them was David Zing. And he was so close to João Gilberto that he was the only photographer that João Gilberto allowed to be with him in the hotel all the time and during the rehearsals and everything. And he was in the recording of Get Gilberto too. And all these photos that we see of the recording sessions and of the rehearsals were taken by David Zing. David Drew Zing. And curiously, the picture that is in the liner cover of Get Gilberto was done not in the studio, but in the Carnegie Hall during one of the rehearsals. And he was very, very important. Actually, as you said, without the Carnegie Hall, maybe nothing of what we are talking about could have happened, because Antônio Carlos Jobim was already 31 years old and had never traveled abroad, had never performed in the United States, had never been in the United States. He was afraid of traveling by plane, as everybody knows. And it was a change for everybody involved in the concert. Even people like Luiz Bonfá, that was already famous, he switched labels from Atlantic to Verve, and Creed signed everybody. And for Jobim, was fantastic, because he didn't want to stay 1 week in New York, and I think that he stayed at least 6 months without returning to Brazil, because he felt how important it was to him to remain in the USA, making contacts with the artists and the journalists and the publishers and working with the lyricists. He found out that he could help in the English translation of the songs. And people like Gene Lees and Jerry Mulligan that did interviews with him for Downbeat and everybody, all these magazines. The Antônio Carlos Jobim started like a second time of his career after the Carnegie Hall. It was essential for him. And he recorded his own album, the first album that was later released in Brazil by Elenco with a different cover. And you see, he could have never met Klaus Augerman, because it was through Creed Taylor that he met Klaus Augerman, as well as was through Luiz Bonfá that he first recorded with Stan Getz. The connections, it was like a multitude of connections that happened after the concert. And when people say, oh, the concert was a mess, okay, it seems that really was, in terms of organization, it was a mess. You know, too many microphones on the stage, because the concert was being filmed by one company and recorded by Audio Fidelity and etc. But the quality of the music performed at the concert was top class. And few people know that before the Brazilians come and perform the second part of the show, Stan Getz and Lalo Schifrin and Gary McFarlane with his orchestra performed at the Carnegie Hall concert. So it's incredible. And the people who attended the concert, Miles Davis, Jerry Mulligan, the Modern Jazz Quartet, Gil Evans, you know, everybody. It was a very special part of the Brazilian, in the history of Brazilian music. It was essential, you know. And there's Bossa Nova before Carnegie Hall and after Carnegie Hall, as well as there is Bossa Nova before Creed Taylor and Verve Records and Stan Getz and after. And even for João Gilberto, it was also, he developed his international career after this trip to New York.
You know, this whole connection too, it starts very early with Laurindo Almeida. That we used to say in Brazil, Laurindo de Almeida, huh? And then becomes Laurindo Almeida. That he comes to America. This is right with yes. Carmen Miranda, right?
Yes, and then he decided to he joined the Stan Kenton Orchestra in the 40s. It's fantastic. Laurindo is our man in the Grammys. He won 5 Grammy awards. There was a year that he won as best classical composer of the year, contemporary classical composer. And there was a tie on the Grammy, something that's very uncommon, you know. And guess with whom he was tied on the award, on the Grammy? Igor Stravinsky.
Wow.
And Laurindo and Stravinsky both went to the stage and each one received a Grammy. And Stravinsky was already a big fan of Laurindo. And then he wrote a piece for him and Laurindo recorded with Stravinsky conducting. Laurindo is incredible. And he was the first guy that improvised jazz, that played jazz over Brazilian rhythms. It was not bossa nova. It was not jazz samba exactly, because most of the songs were especially baiãos and old sambas and everything. But the connection with Bud Schenk was incredible, incredible. We have to take the hat off also to Laurindo Almeida.
And the time I talked with Creed Taylor too, Creed Taylor mentioned why bossa nova, why the music of Jobim, why this connection with Stan Getz made Brazilian music seem sophisticated, because people used to look at Carmen Miranda, who was a big hit in but people in America think that Carmen Miranda was a joke, you know, she was a comedian, you know, nobody pay attention too much about the music at the time.
Yeah, because she was a performer, you know, entertainer.
Yeah, she was one time the most, you know, well-paid person in Hollywood. You know, she was incredible as an actor, and she was a good singer. But yeah, nobody paid respect her as
yeah,
a singer.
Yeah, and she did a great career in movies also. And
so what I'm saying too is bossa nova. Everywhere you go, you can feel it. So you go to a very simple little bar, or this dump you can be, and then you start to play a guitar or some bossa nova beat, the place looks like turns into something else. It is really incredible what the beat of bossa nova does to you. So let's start turning the people on now on this Laurindo Almeida and Stan Getz album. Stan Getz with guest Laurindo Almeida. Stan Getz on tenor saxophone, Laurindo Almeida on guitar.
With Edson Machado on drums.
Edson Machado on drums. And Jorge Dudu Vieta is here too. José Soares, that is another name that is fake.
Yes.
David Bailey again on drums. And Luis Parga. José Paulo on Latin rhythm.
Yeah, no. This one exists. It's because of the delay that we are having aqui. José Soares was the road manager of Sérgio Mendes and was the first percussionist on Sérgio Mendes and Brazil 66.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. The time That was Bob Matthews on bass, João Palma on drums, and José Soares on percussion. He recorded Mais Que Nada with.
And this was all recorded here in New York City.
Certamente.
This was recorded here in New York City at Webster Hall in 1963. Correct? It's a long delay now. It's getting longer and longer.
Yes.
All right. So I'm going to play the album Stan Getz with guest artist Laurindo Almeida from Verve Records. We have some technical difficulties here with this CD player, but we put it out. But anyway, it's already 4 minutes past the hour of 6 p.m. You are in tune with the Sunday Profile, the music of Stan Getz, the Getz Gilberto, together here on WKCR FM New York. Menina Moça, once again, outra vez, this from the album with the guest Laurindo Almeida, Stan Getz, on Verve Records, a beautiful album, another beautiful album, and that was released in 1966. And this Polydor International, another German release, this is a press in Germany. In 1984, this one that I just played. Well, let's put Arnaldo again. We were talking about this whole...
Tell me, boss.
We are talk a little bit more about this Carnegie Hall concert number 2, right?
Oh, yes. There was one that was this... We have a beautiful track that is the Girl from Ipanema, the live version that is, sounds beautiful too. And there are many more, you know, that there are still other songs that were never released on this album. And it was fantastic because it was the first time that João Gilberto performed not only in an intimate and small jazz venue, but in a big hall, you know. So it was the first time that the people that had been fascinated by Getz Gilberto, by the album, had the chance to see him, you know. So it was an historic appearance because it was the first time that people were going to see live that incredible guitar. No? And you see when João Gilberto plays with Getz, how fantastic João Gilberto is, not only on singing and playing guitar at the same time, but also when he only plays guitar and backs a tenor player of the level of Stan Getz, the way that he keeps swinging, but also the space that he gives to the soloist, you know, João Gilberto guitar approach was had a level of sophistication that is unmatched by any other. You don't have in the history of Brazilian music almost 60 years after everything that João Gilberto did, nobody had appeared in the same level of sophistication of in terms of guitar in popular music. And nobody, everybody tries to imitate João Gilberto, but it's impossible because his level was completely surreal. It was out of this world. You know, it's fantastic. It's unbelievable.
It is 6:20 p.m. We get into the night here of this Sunday Profile. Getz Gilberto, and I have set up a very special track, The Girl from Ipanema, but this was recorded live on Carnegie Hall, when they were celebrating the Getz Gilberto success. Talk about, give the intro, and I'm going to play The Girl from Ipanema, record live at Carnegie Hall. 6:27, we get into the last half an hour of Sunday Profile. And I'd like to give a big thanks to everybody who is calling us, all our listeners, and in special our guests, Arnaldo de Solteiro from Rio, and Monica Getz, also Hukawa, today. And such a pleasure to give you this show of a homage to the Getz Gilberto, 60 years of the release of the album Getz Gilberto on Verve. But I'm going to play right now, let me set up, an interview that I did, not an interview, he was a guest here, a great few shop. He was a guest, one of our Tom Jobim specials that we have every year on January.
Travel, housing, and food, so they can focus most of on my helping their child live. Of
the outings were technical, and should be very forthcoming about that. The recordings, the Verve label, which they initially appeared on, had been taken over by MGM in the early 60s, and there had been a great flood. For reasons that probably were just the logistics of the storage area, the flood had hit the tapes that these records were on, had originally been recorded on, and had really hurt them. I mean, this is a physical kind of thing. The tapes had been waterlogged, and getting them to even sit, as I would say, on the reel again was very, very hard, tenuous work. I knew the value and importance of the music, and I set aside, I would say, a significant period of my life towards getting that music back onto those reels. The first Getz Gilberto studio material from March of 63 was a discovery. It's a separate event from the two-track tapes. I found it on multi-track, and I was very happy about that. So that's a researching triumph. But even taking the bows that you're allowing me for these two moments where I had some sort of positive effect on the music doesn't make me, you know, I don't feel or as clear about having anything musical to say other than my own feelings and impressions of the music, where on, say, something like Louis Armstrong, I might go on at great length and then you'd wish you'd never had me on the air. I will say that the first time I encountered Dizzy Gillespie as a performer that I'm aware of, and I was quite young, I was 5, my father took me to Randall's Island, where Gillespie's first United States appearance was following his trip to South America was. It was Randall's Island, I believe, on August 24th of 56. And I have, from that evening, I have one of my clearest early jazz memories, a genuine one, I mean, that is of some value. The Gillespie band, its trumpet section, all had trumpets with the bell pointed up and out as Dizzy's special horn did. And although this had first been tried by Dizzy a few years before, he hadn't really gone public with it, and now he was. It was sort of like a thing that he had introduced on the tour of South America with this trumpet section, with people like Bama Warwick and E.V. Perry and the others. And Dizzy explained it in a winning way that obviously humored as well as explained things, and I have that lasting impression. So that's the impression of a 5-year-old, and here I guess there is some semblance of value to getting a 5-year-old's opinion. But years later, I did talk a great deal with Dizzy about this trip. And you may know that Dizzy Gillespie is, from a jazz perspective, one of the first innovators who really wants to create new fusions in the music. He is aware that the merger of the West and Africa in the New World comes out differently in different places. This profound vision had first visited itself during the swing era when he met Mario Bauza from Cuba in the Cab Calloway Orchestra's trumpet section. And from there, his understanding of Afro-Cuban music and its potential, which after all is Bauza and his brother-in-law Machito's great triumph, they're mm-hmm. the ones who came forward with it. But Dizzy adds his version of it, and it is an important episode in the extreme. It's as important as anything in his career, and you could therefore make a case for it being as important as anything that's ever happened in jazz music or in Afro-Cubop, since Dizzy innovates bebop. And that's up the late 40s, you know, with Channel Pozo and things like that. And it never goes away. It's in everything that Dizzy does often as a specialty from that point on. But you would think that having had such a clear vision, learned from such an important source as the Afro-Cuban music through Mario Bauza, that he would be more on the alert for other such illustrations. But he said he was caught very much by surprise by this new thing, as he heard it in Brazil and indeed in South America in general, and crossed paths with Jobim. Then, 1956, Jobim's stardom, which I'm learning more about hearing this broadcast than I possibly could have known on my own, so let me, is already in its ascendancy by 56. It isn't that Dizzy, and from a jazz perspective, you might want to say it as such, that Dizzy Gillespie heard a virtual unknown Jobim in Brazil. No, the music, he got hip to something that was hip. It had taken root, and he really thinks about it. He thinks about it. And the gestation period, and here's, I'll make this the final point of this little mini lecture, and you'll forgive me for talking so long anyway. The gestation period is also overlooked. Dizzy doesn't take these new insights into rhythm and then, you know, borrow a piece of it and put it on a record, his next record, and then walk away from it, much as many rock and roll stars used reggae briefly in 73 and 74 as a theme or a strand of their layers of text and their mixes and things like that. No, what Dizzy does is he really works on it to synthesize it. If he's with Mario Bauza and meets Afro-Cuban music in 39, and he comes forward with Chano Pozo in 47, there is gestation, yes? And if he goes to Brazil and to South America in general in 56 and starts coming forward with his take on it, 61, 62, 63, you see the reillustration of some very, very long-term negotiation with the music before it is synthesized and blended. And that's an important point. Indeed, I think jazz, now having said Dizzy took his time, needs to be acknowledged for having a clear vision of the importance of this new thing and using it, and that it was connected to jazz even in its home. Jobim would probably want me to say he was a jazz artist if you were here today.
So Dizzy was first saw the vision of the bossa nova first, then Getz and Charlie Bird was
much before Stan Getz. And what had happened is that the music, I think that Charlie Bird certainly needs to be acknowledged, and Stan Getz learns it as much as anybody else from jazz artists. But and here's another connection to Jobim, and again, you're extending way beyond my command of really saying something that is of great worth. But Getz is a lyrical player, very, very lyrical player. I think that's why he found such a home here. He takes on the challenge of finding a way to explain himself as the jazz artist he was in musical terrain that might take away some of the cliches and reflexes of a lesser player. And in a way, you know, some people, they listen to the singing on some of the composer records, like you're playing many artists doing these songs, and you hear maybe less than the voice of the century, yes? Mm-hmm. But you hear lyricism, and lyrics and music and the understanding of how to mate it all is one of the visions of the composer that's the most clear thing on these records to my way of listening. And I think that Stan Getz, as a thematic approach to improvisation, is a lyrical horn player. He's not singing, of course, but he's lyrical in his thing. Knew that he could use this, and it suited him. He would downplay it from time to time in later years because it's just a period of his career and say, well, you know, it was a thing and it worked. But there's a match, a very strong and important match. And the records did have a pop following, but they have a quality to them. They are an important musical episode in more than just Stan Getz's career. But if you're asking for me to sort it all out, I find jazz being a major reason, under-recognized, for the bossa nova taking an important place in music in the United States of America. Jazz, point one. I see it being in the forefront early as well as important. It's valuable and important, but it's also first. That I hear through the study of Dizzy Gillespie and his trip to South America in 1956, including a finite absolute intersection with Joe Beam himself, there is a major jazz force, Gillespie, the genius, hitting this music and working on it over time before he himself used it. And, of course, by the time you get it from Dizzy, you might say it's just blended and it becomes, you know, because he met Lalo Schifrin during the same period and there's a whole other world. Yeah. And thing. But that there's a very important story here. That Charlie Byrd is less acknowledged than Stan Getz, although he made the longer statement and stayed with it the longer time and might even be the person who was hipper to the jive, as we say in jazz. And but that Getz's lyricism...
6:44 p.m. and we are in the Sunday Profiles. Just played Getz All Go Go, Stan Getz, and Astrud Gilbert on vocal, Gary Burton vibes, and Jenny Jericho on bass, Joe Hunt on drums, and Elcio Milito, also him here, the great Elcio Milito, in Telephone Song and One Note Samba. Getz All Go Go, it's Verve Records, 1964. But let's get in touch with our guest, Arnaldo de Soltero. All right, Arnaldo.
Hello.
Yes, man. We are on.
It was fantastic to listen to these songs. I was a close friend of Elcio Milito. I love the way he plays the drums, the brushwork. His brushwork is incredible.
What about?
And it was great to listen also to Phil Sharp.
Yes.
Because he mentioned that Dizzy Gillespie, who was really very important to Brazilian music. The problem maybe is that when he made contact with Bossa Nova, it was so in the beginning of Bossa Nova that he didn't have the complete vision of the story, you know, of the whole picture. And when Getz was involved, the three João Gilberto albums had been already released and everything, most of the repertoire of Antônio Carlos Jobim songbook was already completed, done. But when Dizzy came for the first time, I remember that the first song that he recorded was Chega de Saudade. That was also the first one that had English lyrics by John Hendrix. And Dizzy recorded the song, I think, in the very beginning with Lalo Schifrin on piano and everything. And I met him many times, and he always asked me about João Gilberto. They were close friends. João told me that when Bebel Gilberto was born, one of the persons that went to visit her was Dizzy Gillespie, and I met Dizzy and interviewed him in 86 for Brazilian TV. I was 23 years old, and Dizzy became my friend, and fortunately it's on YouTube because nobody believes, you know, that I met so many people that were so much older than me, you know. But that's the way I loved music. I love music that's made by these masters. So Dizzy was one of them. And it was interesting because I posted a picture of an album that he had signed for me. And Anis called me and said, "Oh, it's the first time that I see the signature of my uncle." That's fantastic. Great Dizzy. I miss him. Great person.
What else that we are talking about? There's so many new situations and things appearing about the Getz Gilberto album. People are calling me now and ask me to play again. They are interested to the single. Once again, the Girl from Ipanema single is in 45 RPM. And it is this version that I have here. It is funny. They say 2 minutes and 55 seconds. You got it?
Yes. 2 minutes and the one that I have is 2 minutes and 46 seconds.
I see other versions different too. Yes. I think it's more than 400 different versions of this single.
Also because sometimes there were many singles that Creed Taylor used to direct to the jukeboxes. Do you remember the jukeboxes?
Right, yes. I love the jukebox, yeah. This is the good old days.
So many times there were different pressings, yes.
Yeah, this you had to pay for put your music in a jukebox too, you know? This is mafia time. Well, the delay is getting longer and longer. Okay, let me play this request and we'll be right back. We are almost 10 minutes before the hour of 7 p.m. Yeah, that's funny, man.
What's coming next?
Yeah, the single request that somebody called about the single, The Girl from Ipanema.
Oh, great.
All right, man. WKCR-FM New York, WKCR-HD is 4 minutes before the hour of 7 p.m. And I'm saying, good evening to you people. Stay tuned. Transfigure Night. This is another show coming up. I'm used to Transfigure Night because I'm here every Wednesday with Som do Brasil. But once again, I'd like to say thanks to Arnaldo de Soltero, our guest for the whole 4 hours here on WKCR. And Monica Getz, also she was here with us giving some incredible information in a new release of, it was 5 hours. It went so fast. Thank everybody for listening and calling us. I'm sorry, the last call, I can't take it. You know, I had too many calls. I'm only by myself here. And happy Father's Day, everybody. Let's say good evening to Arnaldo de Soltero in Rio de Janeiro. Once again, thank you, Arnaldo, for coming and do this show. It was a beautiful performance tonight of yourself from Rio de Janeiro, the marvelous city.
Thank you, Jasmine, and many thanks for the invitation. Thanks to our WKCR. Thanks for all the listeners. You are one of my idols, along with Jobim, Gilberto, and I was fortunate to meet all these guys and to be friends with all of them, Milton Banana, and I'm fortunate to be your friend too. Thanks so much.
All right, so we're going to finish with a Corcovado live from Carnegie Hall, 1964. All the best to you people. Enjoy your week.